Where can you be?
That's Ella Fitzgerald. I'm Rick Kogan, back from my 1 week off. It's the longest, I think, I've ever been off the radio. It is my unbelievable pleasure to have in here for the next hour. I'm playing Ella Fitzgerald. We're talking Ella Fitzgerald after 10. Someone I admired since I began in this business, even though he was in the better end of the business, the make-money end of the business, television. Walter Jacobson is in here to talk for an entire hour because, many reasons, but because it was your birthday. It was your birthday on Friday. How did you celebrate your 80th birthday, Walter?
I did what I do every Friday, which is go to East Bank and work out and have lunch with a friend and then head out toward Indiana, where we have a cottage on the lake for the weekend.
You mentioned in Rob Feeder's column, his blog, his thing, that you attribute this longevity, an 80s longevity, to the fact that you work out every day?
Yeah. Well, I try to. Sometimes I miss a day, but it's a 5 to 6 days for sure a week. I mean, it's not heavy workout. But the reason I did that, you know, I went through, like our friend Bill Zemme and others we know, went through cancer.
I know.
And I was one of these guys who was always picking on the tobacco companies for trying to advertise and capture kids, right?
Yeah.
So all the time I was doing that, I was smoking.
You were participating,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I went in for a general physical examination and was told that I should have a prostate examination, which I had, and the doctor said that you've got a problem. We don't know how bad it is, but there's a little tumor on your prostate. Mm. Don't worry about it. You may have been through this, too, where doctors always say that prostate cancer grows more slowly than any other kind of cancer.
I've heard that.
You'll die of something else before you'll die of prostate cancer.
Right.
But they said to me, you know, why don't you just get rid of it? You can have surgery is one choice. You can do nothing and just wait. Or you could do radiation. Radiation sounds horrible. I keep thinking of...
Well, going under the knife sounds horrible to me, too.
Well, he said,
I mean, all of it sounds horrible to me.
This was just 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And he said, at your age, surgery is not the greatest thing.
Huh,
so
interesting.
Do the radiation. Reluctantly, I went in to see the radiation doctor who said, okay, and we'll do this. And he told me what it involved. And he said, but before we can, we have to take a test of you. It looked like one of those machines that you just go in for X-ray.
Yeah, sure, like going through in the airport or something.
Right,
yeah.
And on that, they found a huge tumor on my lung. My internist said, you're lucky to be alive.
Jesus.
And you better get it taken out right away. So I went, this was 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I went in for surgery. The surgeon said, I will not operate on you unless you stop smoking at this minute. I said,
were you in the hospital?
No, well, I was in the hospital. No, I was in the hospital then. Yeah. No, I was not ill. I didn't go to the hospital. I just went to see the surgeon to talk about this
surgery, yeah.
Yeah.
And you stopped it. You did stop. I know you did.
Yeah,
you're proud of that, too. Yeah, you're proud of that, too.
But I hate it. I still love Mrs. Cigarette, you know.
Well, you smoked for a long time. Did this give you, you know, Walter, even turning, the whole notion of turning 80 can make, or 75, or 70 in some cases, can make one very reflective and very philosophical about the meaning of it all. Did that back-to-back 1-2 cancer punch make you sense your own mortality?
No, that didn't make me sense it as much as knowing that I was going toward 80 years old.
Yeah.
I have a couple of really old dear friends who are that too, so we've begun talking about that. And the sense of mortality does seep in.
Sure.
And I find not only myself, but a couple of other people I know who are my age, thinking how life was. And I say, my life has been great. If it's time for me to go, I'll go. That's okay. I couldn't ask for anything more than what I've done for the past 50 years. So I don't see myself in any kind of a scheme to get older and survive.
Or regretful at all. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And I'm perfectly healthy now.
Sure.
Both tests came back totally clear. All I have to do is go back every half a year or so to just make sure nothing
has come
back.
You can't smoke anymore, Walter. You know
I miss that. God.
Well, a lifetime of smoking makes
I've never seen you without a cigarette.
I stopped.
Come on.
I stopped. You helped inspire me to stop. Yeah.
How long ago?
About a month and a half.
Why?
A because I got bronchitis and I thought I was going to die.
No kidding.
Yeah, no kidding.
Cold turkey.
So we're together. Well, no cold turkey. Patches, gum, ice cream, you name it. Anything that I could find.
And now? Stuff.
I'm fine. I feel pretty good. I mean, I miss it.
You do miss it.
I miss
it.
Of course, anybody who does this misses it. Yeah. All right, Walter Jacobson, talking about hospitals, you were born at Michael Reese Hospital.
I was.
80 years ago. You were a Southsider for a while, right?
I lived off and on in the South Side as I was older. But I was born there, but I grew up in Rogers Park.
All right. How does a young man who is not named Daly or something become a bat boy? Legendarily, you're a bat boy for the Cubs. One thing I've never seen that's never been explained to me is, how do you get a job like that,
Good
Walter?
Question.
How did you get that job?
I'll tell you, if you promise me when I go on and on and on, you'll say enough, Walter, and cut me
no!
off.
No! This is the first of many. I'm doing the autobiography of Roger Badish, our newsman, and now I'm doing the autobiography of Walter Jacobson.
Okay, I'll try
go
to
ahead,
remember.
Go ahead, go on for an hour. If it's boring, I'll stop you.
Okay, great. And don't feel shy about stopping.
I won't.
No, you won't, I'm
I
sure.
Won't.
My mother was a Cubs fan. We lived on just off Sheridan Road on the north side. And in 1945, when the Cubs were in the World Series,
yes.
My memory is standing at a dining board in the kitchen, ironing board. That's a problem with being 80.
Don't worry
I'll tell
about
you
it.
This.
We all know what you're
standing at the ironing board, listening to the Cubs, and I was, because very close to her, became a Cub fan, but just on the radio, and decided that one day I am going to be a Cub player. Course, that
yes, of course.
But we all thought that, right?
Like all young Jewish kids in the 40s. Yeah, right.
And I wanted to play second base.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go to the Cub games. I'd get on the subway and go to Addison and get on the elevated.
Yeah.
Get off at Addison and go to Cub games by myself all summer long, climb over the turnstile and talk the usher into letting me in.
Of course.
And when I was 13, Rick, I think I was 13 or 14.
Yeah, that'd be about
I
right.
wrote a letter to P.J. Wrigley.
P.K. Wrigley. The owner, doesn't matter now. The owner of the Cubs.
Right. I wrote it and sent it to Wrigley Field, telling him that I wanted to be a bat boy. Was there any chance I could? Of course, I didn't get a letter back, but very shortly thereafter, I did get a letter back from his public relations guy, who said, come in and talk to us. Why? I have no idea. My letter must have been, it's too bad I didn't keep it. It must have been just effusive
about how much I love the Cubs. Oh, my God, it'd be worth a fortune now, yeah.
Because I loved the Cubs. I used to go to like 20, 30 games a year.
Wow.
And he called me in, and I met with the groundskeeper chief, who was in charge of hiring and taking care of the bat boys, and we talked for an hour. My dad had, by then we had moved up to the North Shore.
Yeah.
My dad drove me down to Wrigley Field and waited outside while I went in and talked. And it didn't sound from this guy, Bobby Dorr was his name, it didn't sound from him that I was going to get a job as a bat boy, but he asked me questions that kind of hinted to me that maybe I had a chance at it. And when I left there, went back outside and got in the car, my dad said, what'd he say? I said, he asked me questions like, how tall am I? What's my weight? How will I get out of school to be a bat boy? Why do you want to be a bat boy? Oh, because I just have
to
be a bat boy.
My mom loves the Cubs. Right. My mom loves
right.
the Cubs.
Right. Whatever it took, right?
Yeah, sure.
So nothing happened, Rick. I had this interview. My dad didn't want to make me feel like I was a failure.
Sure.
He said, you'll get it.
You'll get
it.
Sure.
Maybe you won't, but I know he was thinking, I hope I don't, because he'd have to drive me down.
He's going to be the chauffeur. He's going to be the first Uber driver.
Right. So I just waited, and I always listened to the Burt Wilson Cubs news.
Yeah.
Is that right? Burt Wilson Cubs
news? So,
yeah. Every night at like 6 to 6 o'clock. And I was listening to it one night, maybe 3 months after I had gone down to Wrigley Field, and as I turned it on, he was saying, and the Cubs have announced, and then I heard Upson. Upson will be the Cubs' new bat boy for this season, 1952. And I thought, oh, damn, I mean, it's gone. Until the phone started to ring. People calling, friends called, relatives called. And
you
said,
didn't hear the Walter
I didn't
Jake.
Even hear the Jake.
You didn't hear the Upson. Walter Jake Upson. Part.
That's So.
Oh, my God. What a great, great
story.
My
mother called Wrigley Field that night and said, my son will not get off my neck. He says that he wants to, he was named
You've announced
that boy
this.
For the Cubs. And is it true? And the guy or woman on the other end said, of the phone said, you'll have to call back tomorrow. So she called back tomorrow. Make a long story short, yes, it was true. So
that is a fabulous story. Were your parents jumping up and down? Well, your mother must have been thrilled.
Well, I was thrilled because of the Cubs.
Yeah.
But I don't think they were thrilled.
To drive you down from Glencoe. That's a great story. Ladies and gentlemen, you have heard the definitive tale from the Bat Boy's mouth of how Walter Jacobson became a Bat Boy.
A letter to P.K. Wrigley.
We will
to
now.
All you young kids who want to be Bat Boys.
Yeah, good luck. Yeah, good luck. Write to Tom Ricketts. Right. Good luck. Good luck getting your letter there. We'll be back in a couple minutes, and we will then begin, and I mean just begin, to explore Walter Jacobson's career as a college kid and then as a journalist. We'll be right back. That's Ella Fitzgerald. We'll be talking about her later. Now we're in the midst of examining the life and times of my guest Walter Jacobson, who turned 80 years old on the 28th. Aubrey Mumpower just informs me, our great engineer, that he turned 90 on the 28th. No, he informed me that his birthday shares a birthday with Walter and is probably, I don't know, Aubrey, 50, 45. I don't know how old
you are. I believed you there for a second.
Yeah. His hair is whiter than yours, Walter. So I'm so totally confused. Aubrey Mumpower turned 68 the day Walter Jacobson turned 80. Walter, he has finished his year as a Cubs bat boy. He has decided to go from New Trier High School to Grinnell. When did the journalism bug grab you? Because you eventually wound up at the Columbia University School of Journalism. When did you decide, Walter, that you wanted to be a journalist? And tell me, because I remember these times too, what did journalist mean at the time? I don't think kids said, hey, I want to be a journalist and be on TV. Know what I mean?
Absolutely not, especially at my age. You want to know the age?
Yeah.
When, you ask?
Sure.
5 years old, 6 years
old. Wow, why?
I knew I wanted to be a reporter and never wanted to be anything else. And here's a sad story. It happened because I remember I knew I was riding my tricycle around Kenmore and Devon Avenue at the Sovereign Hotel.
Sure.
And there was a crowd gathered. And I looked up from my bike, and there was a guy standing on a ledge outside of a window, and he jumped and splattered on
sidewalk.
Me and my bike.
Oh, my God.
And I pedaled home as fast as I could to tell my mother what I had just seen. And she wanted to protect me. She was afraid that I was mistaken. But all I wanted to do, she told me later, was tell the story.
That is
so that's where the reporter's bug
that
began.
That is fascinating.
And it never left, Rick, from one place to another.
You have been also as energetic a reporter as this town has ever seen, more than 50 years. I should tell you all that much of what you'll hear tonight, and Walter will be on again in October, I'll tell you why. That is because his fascinating and clear-eyed and very self-effacing biography, Walter's Perspective, a memoir of 50 years in Chicago TV News, published first in 2012. It's still available in hardcover. It's going to be reissued this October in paperback, so Walter will be on again. So don't think you're going to get all of Walter here. You're just going to get a taste of Walter. It's a remarkable book. I reviewed it and had some unbelievably nice things to say, and I didn't always have nice things to say about you, which we'll talk about too. But that's a remarkable thing. So you went to college with the notion of becoming a journalist. Were you imbued at all, Walter, with the whole, you know, the front page era kind of thing? You had to have seen the movie and you had to know a little about what, you know, the raucous scene.
Rick, I don't think I had strong feelings about what journalism may have meant, not only for me, but to the country as a whole. It wasn't a subject that was discussed the way we're hearing it being
discussed. Yeah, and you wouldn't have journalism classes at New Trier. They might have been a school paper.
Yeah, that's right. And I was a sports editor of the New Trier News, so it just kept growing, but not in a philosophical or even a business sense of what it was all about.
Basically, since this tricycle thing, you wanted to tell the story, period.
Right. And I wanted to be a newspaper reporter. I wanted to be a writer. And my heroes in the business were writers for the New York Times, Scotty Reston and that crowd. And I had no interest, never thought that I could ever get into television. It didn't mean anything to me. I wound up being on the other side of that formula.
Well, you started in the classic newspaper training ground, the City News Bureau.
Right.
Which was, for those of you, no longer exists, but for those of you people who don't know, it was the ultimate, ultimate training ground. It was not the most pleasant place to work, but you learned how to do it, did you not, Walter?
You learned if your mother told you she loves you, check it out.
Check it out.
That's right. And there was a lot to learn and a lot going on. I mean, the city never sleeps, of course.
Well, and also, you have been, I just want one kind. This is the greatest news, Don. I forget New York. Forget Donald Trump. This is bar none, the greatest news town. Politics is like sports, just on every single level. So I want to get, before we take another break, I want to get you went to UPI, right? After the City News Bureau. Did you try after the City News Bureau to get a job at one of the then four newspapers in town?
Well, yes. You know, my first job in the business was as a leg man for the columnist at the Daily
Chicago
News,
American.
Jack Mabley. Yeah. Well, he started the Daily News, and then he went
That's
to
That's right.
And he kind of helped guide me through. I met him because he was covering sports, and he came to a Cub game one day when I was bat boy, and he was asking me questions. And I then insisted that I be able to ask him questions. So then I never stopped. What do you do? What's it like? I think it was that stage, as you just mentioned.
Well, was your he sensed your curiosity, I think, too.
Oh, maybe. Willingness to work hard. He let me do whatever he needed to be
that's
done.
That's what leg men, as they call them, do. They're very glorified assistants, but they do learn a great deal. It always befuddles me, and a modest heartbreak that people like Mabley was a giant in this town. When Jack was writing his column, it was as popular. This is when there were four newspapers and they each had hundreds of thousands. The Tribune probably had more than a million circulation. It certainly had more than a million in those days. Mabley was a giant in this town, was he not?
Oh, my God, was he a giant. And was he my hero?
Yeah.
Was he straight-laced? He was a former Marine.
Oh, yeah.
And he was on the more conservative side of most issues, but he had a big heart, and he thought about the little people and the poor people, and people loved him. And, you know, he went on to work as he was retiring at a suburban newspaper.
Yeah. He had, you know, the thing is, I mean, I find that there is no immortality. I think, especially for newspaper writers, and maybe a little more for television journalists, but that's something I want to.
You know,
I don't want people. People should not forget people like Walter Jacobson and Mike Royko and Jack Mabley, who informed people for decades. We got to take a break. This is one of the reasons I love having Walter on, because he has this kind of perspective on what journalism has meant to Chicago, to the world, and how it is changing, perhaps not for the better. So please stay tuned. He's on for another half hour. Then he'll be on in October. Then he'll probably be on in December and February and on and on and on, because Walter's had an amazing life. The book is called Walter's Perspective, a memoir of 50 years in Chicago TV news. Some of the stories he's telling tonight are in there, and a lot of others, too. So we'll take a break, then we'll get some news. At Ella Fitzgerald, we'll be talking about her at 10. We are just scratching the surface in the life and times of Walter Jacobson, who it's a good reason to have someone on because they turned 80, but Walter could be on any time, and he will be on again in October when the paperback edition of his fine, fine 2012 biography, Walter's Perspective, a memoir 50 years in Chicago TV news, hits the stands. It will make the perfect, perfect Christmas gift for you and all of your news-loving pals. He is now, we have him now, working for the legendary columnist Jack Mabley as a leg man, which is a more than an assistant. A columnist had to fill Mike Royko at a series of leg men. He used to call them leg creatures because they were men and women. What did you do for Jack? It's a great training ground, too.
To be that young and be in a newsroom with the green hats and the typewriters.
No kidding.
All the time and the
cigar
wire services.
Bottles in the drawer. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. He had me open his mail. He'd get 20 or 30 letters a day. One of them was from a nudist colony in Indiana, the name of which I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
And inviting him to come and spend a day, hoping that he, of course, would write a column on it.
Of course.
He sent me to take his place. He called him up.
That is the greatest young person assignment I have ever heard of in this business.
I must have been about 19 years old.
Oh.
So he said, go take notes, bring your notes back to me.
Where were you supposed to keep your notes?
You haven't got the... Oh, you know I had to get undressed. I was going to surprise you with that.
Yeah, well, it's a nudist colony.
Yeah, but not for a reporter.
Oh, right. Yeah, you can just walk in with your clothes on and look around.
Well, I walked in with my clothes on. Uh-huh. I went to the administrative office, and she welcomed me, and she said Mabley had called and told her that I was coming and to please help me get my story. And she said, you're perfectly welcome to... be anywhere on the grounds, play mm-hmm. volleyball, go to the swimming pool, go to lunch. The only thing you have to do is take off your clothes. And I was at my first major crunch in the business.
Your first crisis in the business.
I couldn't say no. I mean, I had a great opportunity.
You're a reporter. Of course you couldn't say no. How could you say no?
Can't. So I did. And she gave me a little bag to put around my wrist. And in the bag, I could put my notebook and a pen and then go wherever I wanted to go. And then when I get to the lunch hall, when the bell rang, I had to get into a line. This was co-ed nudist colony.
Uh-huh.
I had to get into a long line to wait for food, a tight line to wait for food, which I did, had my food, cleaned up, and had to put my things, the garbage in the container, and then...
When you, Walter, would walk up to one of these, one of your naked interview subjects and say, hi, I'm Walter Jacobson from the Chicago American, can I talk to you? Were they reluctant?
No, they were not at all reluctant, and they all had basically the same story, which is the class that you're in and life disappears when you're naked. There's no difference between anybody except the size of things. And so
the size of things. Right. Yes, that's well put. The size of things. Jack wrote that column. You came back with your notes?
Oh, not only did he write it. I came back. I gave him the notes. And the next day, he said, I sent my young assistant, Walter Jacobson, to take my place at a nudist colony. And here are his notes. He ran my notes as the whole column. Right.
How interesting.
And he wound it up with the greatest punchline.
He also must have been really proud of you.
I think he was, yeah.
You know, I can see guys in a newsroom going, hey, we sent the kid down to the nudist county to get naked. He went to wonder what's going to happen. How long did you work for Jack?
Just 2 summers.
Yeah.
And then I wanted to stay, and he said, no, you've got to go back to school. When you're finished with school, we can talk again. I kept in touch.
When you did finish with school, you came back here, obviously, and you wanted to be a newspaper reporter.
Right.
Did you do that at all before going to...
No. Yes, I was a news reporter at Chicago's American.
Right.
I was assigned to a city hall, to the Cook County office building. That was my beat.
Yeah.
And I was there every day, and the daily news reporter... was Ryko.
Sure was, man. Sure was.
So guys, that's what we began to fight.
You guys had a very, this is for the next show, you and Mike had a very interesting relationship. I think there was considerable jealousy involved on his part.
Not jealousy.
Oh, no, I know.
I just wanted to beat him.
There was some envy. And there's always, it's always jealousy when someone else is getting a story you didn't get. That's what I consider jealousy, the jealousy of the scoop.
That's right.
The jealousy of the scoop. And you guys were competing, and you did start competing against one another. And then you were doing your perspectives when Mike was doing his column. And boy, for those of you who don't remember Walter's perspective, they were hard-hitting pieces, man. And he had unbelievably good sources, too. That was another thing that that people, I literally believe that people in City Hall, if there was two phones, there was either calling you or Mike, don't you think?
I hope you're right. That sounds very good.
No, sure. I think it's absolutely true. What lured you away from print
in my life?
What was it that, was it a person? Was it a, hey, TV looks really fascinating? What lured you away? Because you seem to have been born since the tricycle thing, right, to be a print reporter.
That's an easy question for me to answer.
What is it?
I was a pretty aggressive reporter at Chicago's American.
Sure.
And one of my workmates, we were never friends, didn't really like each other. He was much older than I.
Yeah.
He was hired by Channel 2 News away from the American to be the news director at Channel 2. He was there for a half a year, and he called me up because he remembered my time at the American being kind of like him. His name was John Madigan, mm-hmm, a pushy Irishman from the South Side. I was a pushy young Jew from the North Side, and there was that connection. But he respected, or at least saw me as an aggressive, fighting reporter who might help him in the radio.
Sure.
So he called me up and said, you want to come over here and be a reporter instead of being...
Radio.
Because John Madigan, television.
Television. John Madigan became famous for that news radio. 78.
Right.
But he was a smart guy.
Right.
He was a very smart, shrewd guy. So,
and he was a loyalist, a Mayor Richard J. Daley loyalist.
Oh, no question.
You know, the Southside Irish, they were all together. And he...
What was it, though? Was it a challenge for you, or was it money?
No, it had nothing to do with money. I didn't even know what money was at that time.
Yeah, you're right, yeah.
I think I may have had an idea that there was more money in television, but I wasn't thinking
about
that.
Always
I just wanted to know what it was in television that made it so prominent.
Yeah.
Why was television so successful? Why don't I go see if I can take – I said I'd take the job. But
sure.
I had to go to the – I didn't want to lose my job at the American. So I went to the boss. His name will come to me in a minute.
Yeah,
you'll know
who
it
doesn't
was.
Doesn't matter.
And I said, could I take a six-month leave of absence to try TV? I've wanted to know what it's like. He said, you walk out of this place. And he used
a word
we could use on television.
Yeah.
Don't you ever come back if you want to go into television. You go there and stay there. I couldn't resist chance to see what it was like, so I went.
It's a gauntlet. It's a challenge. It's thrown on the ground to you.
Yeah. And you know what, Rick? As you know, there's recognition in television that you don't get in print and on the radio.
No kidding.
Yeah, and television has a greater impact on the community, a greater impact on City Hall. So there are a lot of good things about it. There wasn't a lot of money when you start as a reporter.
Sure.
Not much more
than
newspapers.
Well, especially news operations in those days. They didn't see news operations as the money cow that people see news operations now. They saw it. And also at the time, to make that switch, I mean, I think in the 60s that television was looked down upon. There wasn't a great deal of substance to it. You know, Walter, and I think that's probably why they brought Madigan over and hired you over. You know what I mean? Newspaper guys looked down on TV in those days, didn't they not?
Oh, still do, don't they?
No.
John Cass always nails a news reporter.
I know. Some do, some don't.
Yeah. But there's that jealousy because television people do make more money. Not so much anymore, Rick,
because
who are on television now are brought in here from Iowa and Kansas because they're inexpensive.
Right.
They don't know Madison Avenue from Madison Street.
No.
And also the
fracturing of television over the last. I mean, there used to be some big, big salaries in this town.
Oh, yeah.
Big salaries. I think it wasn't a two, but maybe it's seven. I think four people made like $1 million a year. Sports guys were making $1 million a year. We're getting way ahead of ourselves.
Oh.
But what did you first think of when you – were you comfortable on camera?
No. Here's what happened. I was John Madigan said you can be a writer. He didn't say you're going on television as a reporter, and I pestered him enough to let me finally go on the street every now and then and be a reporter. And I went out very soon after I got there to cover a fire on Michigan Avenue. And there was just some smoke coming out of a window near the bridge. And I did a little report on the 6 o'clock news.
Huh.
And the phones lit up people who saw me, oh, Walter, your friends, you are now on television. There was more recognition and more ascending power being on television at a fire than there was writing a column in the Daily News,
yeah.
which I found disturbing. But at that point, I realized that there's a lot of impact, and I could make things better for a lot of people, which I'd like to do, so I was going to stay.
And
I
stayed.
And then I was mostly a writer on Sunday at noon. I was a producer and writer of a Sunday noon show. I didn't do any. I've never done any anchoring. The anchor man for that noonday called in sick, and they had nobody to do the news. I was there producing and writing in shorts and a T-shirt, and I had to go do the news. So I scrambled around the dressing room looking for a tie and a shirt, and I stood on a box about a foot and a half high so I could get behind the podium and look like I was reading the prompter when it went wrong. They were kidding me over my earphone, saying that I had to take my clothes off because I needed to get a mic that only worked.
Back at the nudist colony. Yeah. This is unbelievable.
Right.
You're back at the nudist colony.
I got through it, but I had the bug.
Well, it also, it's in the same way that I think this is says something about Walter's fortitude and kind of innate appeal that he convinced the Cubs in a conversation that he would be their bat boy. And I think by facing that challenge in the newsroom, you convinced them you became an anchor. We're going to take a little break again, and then we are going to get Walter from his early days on TV to the legendary pairing of Walter Jacobson and Bill Curtis. Because Walter and I could talk for days. I've already booked him for October when the paperback edition of his fine biography, lively, surprisingly self-effacing, Walter's Perspective, a memoir of 50 years in Chicago TV news, comes out in paperback. So don't worry, you're not going to get it all tonight. You'll get more in October and then more later on. We'll be right back with Walter Jacobson. And I've got 10 more minutes with Walter Jacobson today, and then he will be back in October when the paperback edition of his fine, fine biography comes out. More than 50 years in the news business, there is a lot to talk about. We've got him. He's in TV. He's been hired by the legendary John Madigan at WBBM. He has stepped up to fill in for an anchor who didn't show up.
Carter Davidson.
Oh, man, I remember Carter Davidson. Wow. And did that give you a real taste for being on camera?
To know that
you could do it.
Yeah, real taste, but not a very good one.
Why not?
The anchor role was not very interesting to me because it's more technical than it is thoughtful. And I didn't like reading the prompter, and the prompter went wrong. And if it goes upside down, there's nothing you can do.
Yeah.
In any case, I wasn't given anchorman role. It was just that one time.
Right.
I was a reporter and a political reporter, and I got in trouble with Madigan because I was sticking my face in front of the camera at City Hall and saying, Mayor Daley says this, but what Mayor Daley means is that. And, you know—
Well, it was hard. That's a great thing. Covering Richard J. Daley, it was an art to figure out what Richard J. Daley was actually saying after he had said something. Were you at all, what were your first, you know, a kid from the suburbs, he didn't grow up in much in the city, and Daley was very much a city kid,
really,
than a city man. Were you impressed by him, the physical, I mean, I've saw Daley often, and I always thought there was something very imposing about him in person. He wasn't a huge guy, but he was...
But he was very solid.
Yeah.
And he was wide, and you knew who he was, and you knew what he thought, and he was overwhelming in conversations. Not conversations, more lectures.
Sure.
Saying what he wants to say, and not wanting to say what he doesn't want to say, and not letting reporters make him say what he wanted, what he didn't want to say. He was a statuesque, big, ruddy face with a great laugh.
I remember
and you
when
know
he,
what, Rick? Huh? He loved this town. He never was interested in pennies. He wasn't making money like we think other politicians were, or at least none
Tom
of us
Keene
ever
and
to
some
find.
Others, yeah.
Yeah. And I was just...
How did he treat, when you first came over there, the press corps, you got guys like Harry Golden in the press corps. You got guys like Jay McMullen, who eventually married Jane Byrne in the press corps. It's a pretty big press corps over there, and all of a sudden you come in as the kid. How were you treated by those guys and the mayor?
I don't think the guys didn't pay much attention to me because I hadn't made a name for myself yet by any means.
Right.
The mayor, I could tell, I knew even then, I was sensitive, that he was irked. He had a feeling that this little kid's going to cause him some trouble down the road.
Yeah, he doesn't know the ropes.
He cut me off when I asked a question he didn't want to answer. But I was so overwhelmed by the power that he had. You know, he was all politics and not as... I was going to say dumb, but that's not the right word.
No.
He's got he had the reputation, as did his son, Richard M.,
yeah.
of not being particularly intellectually smart. But they were both a hell of a lot smarter than we thought they were.
Well, I couldn't
don't
agree
get
with
where
you
are without being very clever. Street smart and economics smart, right?
There's no question. When you were over there, Walter, I have to believe that experience kind of fostered the seed of what became your perspectives, because your perspectives were generally, not always, but generally, you know, reporting. Perspectives were reported. They just weren't thoughts off the top of your head. You were doing short investigative pieces. You must have seen during your time there covering City Hall and being in the county building, things that troubled you, things that you thought needed reporting on, right?
Yeah, and I kind of worked myself into a position as a commentator, by no means identified as such. I was a City Hall reporter, but I would add my commentary to a point where CBS got really ticked off at what I was doing and did get me to stop.
What did they tell you? We don't want to hear your opinion.
No, they didn't want to say that. They do the Madigan and the others who followed him didn't want to say that they were being bothered by, I believe, City Hall.
Yeah.
And they didn't need that kind of controversy. But I was saying things that got people's attention. And I just kept doing it. As I said to you, I stand out in front of City Hall and said, the mayor says one thing, but is meaning and acting in another way. And I was told, in no uncertain terms, Walter, you are a reporter. Who do you think you are, being a commentator? You're not ready to be a commentator. And there's only one commentator in this town, and nobody will ever be.
Who was Len O'Connor?
Len O'Connor, yeah. Of course, and Len O'Connor was my idol.
Yeah.
I wanted to do what he did.
Yeah.
So they got to a point where they kind of had to identify me as something other than a reporter, or fire me. They want to fire me because I was beginning to make a name for myself,
sure.
And then they would have had to explain it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they called me political editor, which gave me a little bit of leeway.
Mm.
And what made this the commentary, the perspective work, was not me any more than the two guys and a girl, woman that I was working with, my assistants, to come up with enough evidence to support the conclusion I made as a commentator. That's where the reporting and the commentary got together.
Boy, it has been, when you look back, and now I'm going to get into this whole being 80 thing and getting very reflective about your career, you have to be kind of amazed at the course it's taken. I mean, even now the tricycle story, for God's sake, the tricycle story, the Bat Boy story, the having to go down to the Naked City, which may have been the name of that nudist colony. If it's not, it would have been a great name for a nudist colony. But confronting those things and this unbelievable passion that you had. The interesting thing about you, Walter Jacobson, is, and I know this, you still have that passion. It has not waned. You may not have the vast outlets you once had, but you still have that passion, don't you?
How can you not? And every year it seems to get better and bigger because of what's going on, both here with Rauner and Rahm and in Washington, my God. But I wanted to be the commentator, and I wrote these things in a commentary way, and I was aware that the station manager and the news director were uncomfortable with it, but I somehow managed to keep doing it, and it was the researchers, my leg men, and the camera crews. My things wouldn't have been of much impact if they didn't have the pictures to go with them.
Sure,
I can't do that anymore.
That's what TV does, right. Man. That's what TV does. Walter, it is really an ongoing pleasure to know you. Walter's on today to sort of celebrate his 80th birthday, because that's worth celebrating, to celebrate his kicking two kinds of cancer, and to celebrate the announcement of the public paperback publication of his fine biography, My Perspective, 50 years. I don't remember the real title, but it's 50 years in the TV news. But it's not just TV news, as you heard tonight. It was newspaper news. And it was a tricycle and a dead body on Devon. This has been a real treat, Walter. We'll do it again for an hour in October.
That's great, Chris. Thanks so much.
My pleasure. Happy.
I said Chris, right?
Happy birthday. Happy birthday. Well, you're going.
Thanks,
back.
Rick. Thanks,
you're thinking Rick. The naked story is just priceless, with a little bag with your clothes and your notebook around your hand. Thank you, Walter Jacobson.